Welcome to Class Ring Attire Podcast. I'm Chris. Joel is taking a week off. He's got a really busy schedule this week. So, welcome to Beardsley 2 Electric Boogaloo. Say hi to the folks, Chris.
Hello.
He's giggly right now. I don't know why. I think he's really just trying to troll me into screwing up the intro. But I'm way more professional than last time.
Nope.
No, I'm not? Okay. Nope. Alright, so basically the biggest reason why we wanted to have you back on the podcast this week is to kind of check in, because you were on about, 2 months ago?
I don't know.
It was
something like that.
It was the episode before Payback. I know that much, because me and you were covering the card.
Okay.
Yeah. And you were still very much a new wrestling fan. You've had a couple months to kind of experience wrestling a little bit more. And recently you even got a subscription to the WWE Network. So, how's that going?
It's awesome. I don't understand why it took you guys so long to actually show me CM Punk.
Yeah.
As opposed to just telling me
about
it.
Well, okay, first of all, we're lazy. Second of all, I don't know, anytime we hang, you come over for Raw, you come over just before Raw starts, and you know, we might hang out for a little bit after Raw, but it's usually, us, watching videos that have nothing to do with wrestling, or just, you know, BSing in my living room. And then we'll have Taco Thursday, and that's pretty much it.
Yep.
Okay.
For the record, though, you did send me YouTube links to all of Kane and Daniel Bryan's group therapy sessions.
I did.
But no links to Punk stuff.
I'm pretty sure, and you, you brought this up.
You sent me the debate.
I sent you the debate. I sent you, I'm pretty sure I sent you CM Punk and Brock Lesnar from SummerSlam.
Nope.
I didn't?
Nope.
Okay. Well, that's my mistake.
Yep.
And I sincerely apologize.
Good.
Okay. But it's one of those things where anytime the whole Punk situation came up, you know, seemed kind of disinterested because you've never watched anything from Punk.
Correct.
So, you know, why would you be interested? And I felt like I needed to fix that. And what really led me to do that was the whole recent developments with the whole, you know, Punk's contract finally running out and then moving him over to the alumni section. And, you know, also that happens to be the same week that Punk is prevalent on Nerdist over at Comic-Con.
Yep.
So it was, you know, it was a mixture of things. So we gathered at my apartment last Thursday and powered through my horrible freaking internet. I hate...
Oh, man, it's...
I hate insert internet provider here.
It was
bad.
It was like every 5 seconds it had to buffer.
If you follow me on my personal Twitter account, you know exactly the internet provider I'm talking about. I just don't want to mention them on the podcast right now. Probably for legal reasons. I don't know.
Now I want to say it.
Okay, whatever. But we watched the podcast. I showed you the Money in the Bank 2011 match. And I showed you a couple stuff on YouTube that wasn't on the network.
Nice faux hawk.
Yeah, I showed him the nice faux hawk video from a house show. I showed him the, it was a compilation of CM Punk's best moments on commentary, which I still don't understand why they don't have any Raws from 2010, 2011 up yet. I don't know if they're rolling those out gradually, but those 2 years in particular are not on the network.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
I don't know. I would very much like to see Raw from those 2 years.
Yeah, and like I was telling Beardsley, 2010 wasn't a great year. We had the whole Nexus storyline, so I guess there's that. But mostly, you know, the Punk commentaries at the very end of the year were amazing. And then in 2011, whenever you had the Pipe Bomb promo in late June, pretty much every Punk promo afterwards was golden. So, you know, you're missing out on all that on the network. But I digress. So since then, you were inspired to get your own subscription to the network. And you've been, for the first few days, from what I noticed from you messaging me, you you kind of dabbled in a couple different stuff, just kind of get a taste for everything. You even watched Total Divas, and apparently you're watching that pretty regularly.
It's not that I want to watch. Have you ever seen, like, two trains collide?
I'm aware, yes.
It's kind of like that. Like, yeah. I started watching it so I could more effectively make fun of you for watching it, and then I just couldn't stop.
See, that's what got me in the first season. And like I said here on the podcast, I got through the first season, and then I watched, like, the first episode of the second season and decided I couldn't take any more of it. So okay. I haven't watched it since.
Right.
So we'll see how long you go before you're able to rip yourself away from it. And it's a painful rip. It's a very large Band-Aid on a very hairy part of your body. So your face, essentially.
It can be pretty much any part of me.
Fair enough. And so, from there, you started going back, and since you don't have 2010, 2011 Raws, you started from 2012 Raws, and you're watching every episode and pay-per-view in chronological order.
Yes.
And right at this point, because we just talked about you're just before getting to Elimination Chamber 2012, and you're dealing with the whole, like, John Cena, Embrace the Hate, Kane, Hosky thing.
Yeah.
And Chris Jericho coming in.
Yeah.
Which is a lot more awesome than the Embrace the Hate.
Yeah. I'm not sure I've ever been more confused at any sort of sporting event than when Jericho came out and insisted on running around the ring for 5 minutes, saying nothing, finally got a microphone, and then continued to run around the ring for 5 minutes, occasionally looking like he was going to talk.
And that is where the phrase Jerritrol came from.
That's a phrase?
It is. It was then.
Okay.
Every now and then he'll come back and troll a little bit, as we saw on Monday Night Raw this past week.
That was... I like that.
We had a good... it was like Jericho dipping his toes in 2001 Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
And it was fun.
So I think if there's any wrestler, after getting the network, if there's any wrestler I like watching almost as much as Punk, it's probably Chris Jericho.
Right. Is it because of the jacket?
The jacket is a big part of it. I do love that jacket. I kind of want to turn my leather jacket into a Swagwire jacket like that.
Yeah, if you're not following us on Twitter, he described Chris Jericho's jacket. If it was an animal, it would be called a Swagwire.
Yeah.
A Swagwire, or however you're supposed to say
it. If you're British, it's a Swagwire. If you're American, like myself, it's a Swagwire.
I don't see much of a difference, but okay.
It's very subtle.
Obviously.
Unless you watch Top Gear.
That's why.
They make such a huge deal over it.
I think that's what it was. Like, I was saying it that way, just because I watch Top Gear a lot. And because there's not a lot of Jags here in... You know, well, there's plenty of Jags. In a different sense.
See, I was saying it that way because I am a red-blooded American.
I know.
And I love my country.
Okay, Jack Swagger, just pump the brakes.
For myself as Zeb Coulter?
Well, facial hair-wise, you're not that far off.
Yeah.
Except he's more of a mustache enthusiast, obviously.
He is like the human version of a rhinoceros beetle.
Okay, yeah, I can see it. Yeah, I always make the Yosemite Sam connection, but...
No, his is more, like, forward. Yosemite Sam's is more out.
Okay, alright, I can see that. Alright. Sure. I guess we should go ahead and talk a little bit more about Raw. Opened up, like we said, we opened up with John Cena having a promo against Paul Heyman. It was, you know, another great Paul Heyman promo. Cena was alright, I guess. and Cesaro came out to kind of defend Paul Heyman, and it was like a weird, like, we've broken up, but we're still friends kind of thing.
I thought it was kind of awkward.
It was at first. He comes out, and before he even says anything, he comes out and hugs Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman's like, what's going on?
It didn't seem to get any better when he took off the robe and was in his, you know, ring gear, which is essentially a Speedo and boots. And then he hugged Paul Heyman again. And well, Paul Heyman seemed to take a second to reciprocate.
Yeah, yeah. Paul Heyman, you could tell, got, you know, more and more comfortable with the idea as Cesaro was speaking.
Yeah.
And that's when it became obvious. We're like, yeah, maybe Cesaro does kind of need a manager to talk for him.
Yeah.
Although the Kmart joke was appreciated by me.
I did like the, you can't wrestle in sneakers. Oh, wait, you can't wrestle? I like that.
Yeah. Very true. And, yeah, I mean, we can debate on whether and how true that statement really is. Or, you know, again, Cesaro was being a heel.
Yeah.
So, that, and, you know, Cesaro, as a heel, likens himself to be, like, you know, one of the best wrestlers in the company. You know, and yes, that statement is very true, but, you know, the character is going to be very arrogant about that, of course. So it's more of that rather than, you know, trying to knock John Cena. Because a lot of people have tried to knock John Cena as far as wrestling ability. Like, the most recent one I can think of was whenever Daniel Bryan and John Cena were going up against each other at SummerSlam. You know, Daniel Bryan kept emphasizing the fact that he's a wrestler. You know, and yeah. CM Punk did the same thing back in 2011. And yeah, John Cena, he's not great, but he can still pull it out for certain moments. And that leads me to the match against Cesaro. That was a really fun match. Stop giggling over the fact that I said pull out.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's a PG show, man.
That's why I wasn't blatantly laughing.
Of course. I was
trying to suppress it. And then you brought it up.
Because you wouldn't stop.
What were you talking about?
The match against Cesaro.
So, I feel like, after immersing myself in wrestling for a while now, being a good heel is only like 15 or 20% wrestling.
Yeah.
The other, you know, 80 to 85% is being able to pull off what I guess kids today would call, quote-unquote, sick burns.
Sure. I don't know. It depends on the ring psychology of it. Like, what makes CM Punk such a great heel, and you'll find out as you get further along in 2012, is the things he does inside the ring during the match.
Right.
You know, not necessarily wrestling moves, but just gestures and everything, you know. A good heel, yes. A good heel basically makes it 50-50. 50% in the ring, 50% outside, you know. The thing about Punk was he wouldn't even really have, you know, as the kids say, sick burns, bro, or anything like that.
Well, it's not what I want to say, but
I can't
say
the
other thing.
I know.
Thing.
A lot of it was Punk just being very brutally honest and saying things that weren't really wrong.
Right.
Probably was the wrong way to go about it, blah, 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 and that's what makes him a heel or whatever. But I found myself, like, Punk cutting a heel promo and saying things, and I'm like, well, he's not wrong. And, you know, it was kind of biting in that sense. So, a good heel, as we've seen, is kind of like that. But it changes from person to person just because you don't want every single heel to be like that. And not every heel can pull that off.
Right.
Or people who try to be, you know, biting and brutally honest just end up being like, okay, that wasn't that big of a deal. Calm down.
And see, that's what I like about watching the, you know, I get like, I think the whole manager-heel relationship is good. I cannot stand Vicky Guerrero and Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'm going through that right now, and it's...
They were together for at least 3 years.
I don't know how much more I can put up with Vicky Guerrero.
I know. You're in, like, the very tail end of it, too.
I feel kind of the same way about Zeb Coulter and Jack Swagger.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I really like the team of Heyman and Lesnar.
Right.
Because Paul Heyman is an amazing speaker. Like, the dude... I think he owned a marketing firm up in New York, or he helped run it, and he's, like, written books on marketing and stuff like that, so he can drop a mean promo when he needs to.
Yeah.
And then Lesnar can destroy some dudes in the ring.
Right, like, it's the perfect combination, like, and, you know, those two have been joined at the hip since Lesnar debuted back in, what was it, 2002, 2003?
Right.
And there was, like, a brief time when Lesnar first came back, in 2012, as you're going to see.
Yeah.
Where he was by himself, and he didn't talk much, but they did have, like, a interview segment, and that's where the joke comes from, where me and Joel are, like, you know, I'm more concerned about what's running on his leg. Pause, pause, pause. Piss. Right. You know?
That I've seen.
Like, we get what the joke was when you said running down your leg. You didn't have to, like, beat us over the head with it.
Right.
So, and then, because back then, like, even though Paul Heyman was on the Punk DVD before that, and, you know, Brock Lesnar came back, still, you know, knowing the relationship that Heyman had with WWE and just everyone's feelings towards each other, we were like, there's no way Paul Heyman's coming back. Right. No way in the world. And then out of nowhere, in Greensboro, North Carolina, here comes Paul Heyman. And, you know, they've been joined at the hip ever since. And, you know, as we've seen, anytime Lesnar's taking a break, they put Paul Heyman with other guys.
Right.
First one you'll see is CM Punk. A guy who doesn't need a manager, but dear Lord, was it amazing when they put those two together.
I can imagine.
You know, that's when, you know, Paul Heyman wasn't a manager or anything. They called him the advocate, if I can say it correctly.
Advocate,
yes.
Yes.
And there were so many great things, like, because that's when, you know, you had CM Punk, who already is a great heel on his own. Then you have a great heel manager working right next to him. And it was just perfect.
You know who else I've really liked as a heel?
Mm-hmm.
Jericho.
Yeah.
Like, because when I first started watching when he came back in 2012,
yeah,
it seemed like they were just going to have him be some, like, weirdo.
Well, see, and here's the thing, like, and you saw whenever he first came back in 2012, just the enormous response he got from the crowd.
Yeah,
like, because it's one of those guys where if at any point, doesn't matter how he left the company to begin with, and anytime he misses any sort of amount of time and comes back, he's going to get a huge reaction.
Yeah.
The challenge is, how do you turn that person into a heel character? And you're seeing how, like, how they're doing it this way is, you know, just not saying anything.
Yeah.
You know, and just kind of trolling everyone. And then, you know, then he could really dig into being a heel from there. And what's really awesome that I've always loved about Chris Jericho is that he can, like, turn it on and off at a moment's notice. 2013, he was came back as a face and worked as a face for a few months. And then CM Punk had his WrestleMania match against Undertaker, took a few months off, came back, and basically in the weeks leading to Payback in Chicago, Jericho called out Punk and basically was a heel just for that month.
Right.
Afterwards, because, you know, first of all, you put up anybody against Punk in Chicago, they're going to be a heel. Then you add the fact that Punk has been gone for a couple months. He's going to get that same thing with Jericho. Like, anytime you return after missing a period of time, you're going to get a big face hit. So, yeah, he was just, like, he was Jericho was a heel just for that month.
Right.
And then afterwards, just went back to being a face. And, of course, he was a face that lost everyone, but still.
Yeah.
It's impressive. Like, guys like, and, you know, Jericho, he's traveled the world, like, four times over, wrestling just about any country you can imagine. He knows just about any, you know, he knows the book backwards and forwards. So, that's where that comes from, is just because he's so experienced. I would like to see more young guys kind of learn like that, you know? Like, now that guys like Jericho, you know, are traveling with them a lot, I would like to see them, you know, maybe pick his brain about that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, and, you know, a lot of guys down in NXT, like, anytime Paul Heyman's around, they're always picking his brain about stuff. And not that he's going around like, oh, you should do this or you should do that. Like, people are literally coming up to him and be like, hey, what do you think of this? And then, you know, he'll gladly offer his suggestion. Like, I think they need more people like that. Because I know we're getting this big youth push from NXT. And, you know, rightfully so, because they've got a lot of great talent in NXT. As you're starting to see, because you're starting to watch some NXT.
Yeah.
And, you know, some guys aren't really that young, but they perceived as young because they're new to WWE. So, I don't know. I forgot where I was going with all that.
Do you want to go back to talking about Raw Monday?
I guess we should touch on them furthering the whole Stephanie McMahon and Brie. They actually ended the show with that segment, which...
Hashtag Jailbird?
Hashtag Jailbird. So, the way that they're framing it to go to SummerSlam is the charges that Brie filed against Stephanie after last week's Raw, Brie's willing to drop them if Stephanie A hires her back on in the company, and B faces her at SummerSlam.
How happy did that make you for the potential for Stephanie McMahon to get in the ring again?
Okay. It would be a momentous occasion. It, you know, certainly it's going to feel like a big deal because they've purposely kept, you know, ever since Stephanie came back as a, you know, on-camera persona, you know, they seem like they're purposely going out of their way to keep her out of the ring in a match.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying she was great in the ring back in the day, but it was entertaining. Like, you know, she learns a lot of mannerisms and stuff from her father and from her brother, Shane. They're, you know, again, Vince McMahon is no athlete at all.
Yeah.
But he knows how to be a heel. Like, he is a master at it. And so she picks up on a lot of that stuff. You have that, and you have Brie, who is very improved in the ring, thanks to her, you know, being married to Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
You know, I think she just kind of... osmosis kind of takes over from that point. So I'm it's definitely going to feel like a big deal, and we're going to get another pay-per-view with two Divas matches, which is, you know, it's what you want to see, because again, the Divas on this roster and on NXT are probably the best Diva roster that they've had in a long time. Now, I'm not saying they're all golden, because Lord knows we don't need to see any matches involving Rosa Mendez or anyone along those lines, or Eva Marie or Cameron. But you have, you know, women like AJ, Paige, Natalya, Naomi, and then you got people coming up as Charlotte on NXT.
Right.
Again, whenever you get to... NXT TakeOver, and you see that match against, that match between, whatchamacallit, Charlotte and Natalya, probably the best Divas match you'll ever see. And, you know, the fact that Natalya can pull a match out like that, and you've never seen her do a match like that on Raw, is more telling of booking, timing, and whatever other factor you want to put in there, not so much talent, because clearly she's got it, you know? So, I don't know, maybe if they show a little bit more I don't know if respect is the right word, but show some sort of effort into Diva's storyline and giving them a little bit more time as far as match-wise, for certain Divas, of course.
Right.
Then maybe we'll see better quality Divas matches, because, you know, Divas matches have been the butt of every joke, every wrestling joke since I came back to wrestling in 2007. You know, there was a point where I would literally have to put my TV on mute during a Divas match because it was so annoying and so hard to watch. It was bad, just horrifying. Now the only time I have to put it on mute is when they give a microphone to Cameron.
Yeah. She's not fun to listen to.
No, she's not.
At all.
Not at all. Not at all.
It's like she's the Funkadactyl who can't really
do anything.
Like she can't do a promo. She can't really wrestle.
She can kind of dance, which is kind of what the Funkadactyls were.
I mean, that's kind of a stretch.
Sure. I don't know. But yeah, they're obviously furthering AJ and Paige, which I know that makes you happy.
Yes.
Makes me happy as well. Yes. I don't really know what the story is here, other than, you know, Paige was being friendly with AJ, even though AJ was already skeptical of it. And then Paige basically, you know, attacked AJ, which was why she was skeptical in the first place.
Right.
So it's not like it should be a surprise to AJ or anything like that. But
In terms of divas, I kind of want to see this whole the Funkadactyls feud play out.
Why?
Because I just think it'd be funny to watch.
Because Naomi, who
can actually wrestle, just beat the tar out of Cameron.
Well, yeah, because they got their match on the kickoff show for Battleground, and it was like less than 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So, and you know, Cameron ended up getting the cheap roll-up win.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess if they want to really put a pin in that, fine. I'm not clamoring for it. But, again, you have more of a fascination with train wrecks than I do.
Yeah, this is
true. Don't get me wrong. Awkward situations make me salivate. more than almost anything ever. But even I'm like, don't really need to see that match. The only I hope we never reach the day where this happens, but the only thing that would be worse would be a one-on-one match between Cameron and Eva Marie.
That would be too awkward even for me.
Yeah.
Like, and I, yeah, I think that's one of the only things that could make me turn off the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And just walk away and not be in that room for a couple hours.
Right. Just for my own curiosity, how many episodes of Total Divas have you watched so far?
I've watched all of them that are on the network.
All of them?
So like six.
Okay. How annoying is Eva Marie's voice?
Oh my god. It's so bad.
It's just like, she's... like, anytime she opens her mouth, it sounds more like she's like...
And she does that thing... One of the things I hate most when people talk... I don't know why they do this, but it's when you're making a statement, but your inflection goes up at the end.
Yeah.
And she does that.
That's exactly
all
what I'm
talking
about.
The time.
Yeah.
And that drives me insane.
You mean it drives you insane?
Drives me insane?
Let's do this?
See, that I love. That may have been one of my favorite things I've ever seen in wrestling.
I've never seen you laugh harder than when Brock Lesnar did his, "Let's do this!
Let's do this!" I'm pretty sure when that came on, I'm pretty sure I was sitting in my usual chair. Pretty sure I fell out of it.
Oh man, I don't remember what promo it was. It might have been leading up to SummerSlam against Punk, I think. But Paul Heyman is sitting there talking, and in the middle of it, Brock Lesnar reaches over and grabs the mic. And as soon as he does that, I remember here saying, oh no.
Yeah.
No. Take that back from him. No. And the funny thing was, as soon as he took the microphone away from Paul and put it up to his face, Paul Heyman instantly took his other hand and put it over his own face. Like, oh god, why is this happening?
See, I love and hate it when Lesnar gets the mic. Because I know I'm going to hate what he says and how he says it. But I know I'm going to find it amusing to no end.
Right.
Because he's so bad at speaking.
Every now and then he'll usually keep it short. And sometimes he actually does pretty good. Like, he'll, like, make a point. And then just, like, at the very tail end of it, he was like, here, say something dumb, Paul. And just throws it back at that Paul.
The other thing I really like, I don't know why I like it, but it's something about whenever Brock Lesnar talks. Like, Brock Lesnar looks hyper-masculine.
Yes.
And so before I had ever heard him talk, you know, I'd seen him probably 3 or 4 times, and I was expecting him to have just, like, this super deep, like, bass rumble of a voice. Just be like, hey, I'm Brock Lesnar.
But instead you get a high-pitched guy from Minnesota.
Yeah. And the first time... The first time I saw that, I thought someone, he was like a ventriloquist puppet. Yeah. And I thought there was just like some guy who's like 5'4", 90 pounds soaking wet, just under the ring, throwing his voice, making this just huge like side of beef man. Just, he looks like something that would be hanging in a warehouse that Rocky would practice punching on.
So he's a dead pig.
Yeah. And so I was expecting, you know, a voice that was so deep it was almost inaudible. And then I got that.
Like, you were expecting Vin Diesel's voice.
Basically.
Yeah.
Like, I was not just any Vin Diesel. I was basically expecting the Iron Giant.
Okay, I was going to say the raccoon.
Is he the raccoon?
Yeah, he's the raccoon. No, you're right, you're right.
Bradley Cooper's the raccoon.
Sorry.
He's the tree man.
Yeah, he's Groot.
Yeah.
Never mind. Sorry, I haven't watched the movie yet.
Calm down, nerds.
Calm down. Don't send me hate mail just yet. Thank you. So, yeah. No, he's, yeah, it's funny sometimes.
Yeah, like,
just his squeal.
And there are not a lot of guys like that from what I've seen in the WWE, which I feel like, you know, all these dudes, like, Jericho sounds exactly like I thought Jericho would sound. Batista sounds exactly like I think Batista would sound.
Big Show, you know, he sounds like a giant.
Yeah.
Kali, he's got a, you know, he sounds how you think he would sound.
Yeah.
A giant from India is going to sound like that.
You know, same thing with, like, Kane and Undertaker.
Right.
And then you get all...
Let's do this!
300 pounds of voice-cracking glory that is Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where it's like, as amazing of an athlete he is and how strong he is, you're willing to kind of overlook it. Because, you know, you're still willing to be like, yeah, he's got a weird voice, but he'll demolish anybody he's in the ring with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Believably. Like, still to the, like, I don't remember what he threw. I think it was a TV monitor. Just chucked it and went over the entire distance of the ring and hit a fan who was sitting next to the ramp. Yeah.
He also seems kind of reckless.
Yeah, that's him. You'll see. Especially because I just rewatched his first match back against John Cena at Extreme Rules 2012. Just how quickly he takes John Cena down and opens his forehead up. It's less than a minute. And then you proceed to have the rest of the match, which is just as terrifying. Like, and just before we watch this, because, you know, I'm still doing this whole thing where I'm going back and watching, like, every pay-per-view CM Punk was involved in. I'm now at SummerSlam last year between Brock and Punk. And it's more of the same. Like, it's just calculated mayhem.
Yeah.
But with no, like, no forethought about anything going on around them. Yeah.
I would love to see, like, a triple threat between guys who really have no regard for actually hurting. So, like, Brock versus Ryback versus Jack Swagger. And just see how that
okay,
turns
okay,
out.
Okay. Funny thing, though. Brock Lesnar doesn't really hurt people after the match. Undertaker being the exception.
Right.
Clearly, but as far as, like, the other guys that he's faced, they've been kind of, you know, more or less fine, okay, you know. Cena, we thought was something was wrong with his arm.
Right.
And I don't know, and they kind of played that up in storyline for, like, that next month after Extreme Rules. I'm not sure yet how much exactly of that was. K-Fab might have tweaked something a little bit, but he was, you know, wrestling, well, he was wrestling John Laurinaitis at No Way Out the next pay-per-view, so.
So, if not like,
or not No Way
you
Out,
know,
Over the Limit.
It's not like where, you know, Edge got an injury and his muscle starting atrophying.
Right. Nothing like that. Probably the most serious one was Undertaker that we're talking, you know, that were of mention. Yeah, Ryback, he basically almost took out CM Punk whenever they were having their second feud in 2013. Matter of fact, that might have been a lot of the reason why, because, you know, there's a lot of reason people are attributing why, you know, Punk is, you know, left. One being he was, you know, the main reason being he's unsatisfied with where he is in the company.
Yeah.
And the second one was, you know, he's just got a lot of injuries that he's, that's kind of been hounding him. And you could probably point to Ryback for some of them. At least the most recent ones. And then you got Jack Swagger, who just breaks everything that seems to be going right. Like Dolph Ziggler last year, and now Bad News Barrett.
And Suck It Barrett.
Everyone like, or I'm sorry, it's Suck It Blair. Everyone likes Bad News Barrett. Except for you.
I will fight someone if they don't like Bad News Barrett.
I know you will.
Talking to you.
Yeah. This is why you need to be on Trash Ring Attire, so you can say bad words and you can talk about Bad News Barrett.
I do like saying bad words.
I know you do.
Also, while talking about Bad News Barrett.
I know. So I'm aware. Much.
So, here's... As someone who's not so much on, like, the business end of wrestling, you know, merely on the show end of wrestling, is there any deterrent to dudes like Swagger if they do end up, you know, like... separating Wade Barrett's shoulder? Like, is there, like, a fine system that gets suspended?
Not so much a fine system, because, you know, a lot of it can be looked at, oh, I didn't really mean to, or whatever. But, in the case of Ryback, you know, he...
I mean, from what I understand, Ryback has a history of doing this to people.
He has a history of being reckless. He has a history of butting heads with people. You know, a lot of rumors went around. Like, there was a table... He threw CM Punk through a table at one point, and either Punk didn't hit it right, or he almost missed it completely.
Right.
And then afterwards, there was a, you know, the rumor was there was a big shouting match between he and Ryback afterwards. If you're causing that much of a problem, and, you know, it happens more often than not, then they'll probably put you in the doghouse for a while. That's what happened to Ryback, you know, because at the end of 2012, there was probably, other than John Cena and CM Punk, there was probably no one bigger in the company than Ryback was. He was basically poised to be the next guy. Like, I was there in person for the one where, in storyline, CM Punk got injured and had to, you know, take time off and he couldn't wrestle at TLC, and it was because of Ryback in storyline. But it was, sounded like it was a nagging injury anyway. But I was there the night that they took CM Punk out. And anytime a heel was doing something wrong and was ganging up on a dude or anything, throughout the entire night, the crowd was just going nuts for Ryback to come out to help, you know, save the day or whatever.
Right.
And then the show ended with CM Punk taking a lie detector test. Yeah, that was the end of the freaking show. That was the last time they've been to Greensboro. That was at least Raw. Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. But the funny thing was, we were... I was there with J-Roll, and,
I missed that guy.
I know. And we were sitting right in front of, like, four or five inebriated law students. And I'm not going to say the name of the college, but you know, when I say law students and they're in Greensboro, you know the law school I'm talking about.
Not quite in Greensboro.
But you know what I mean. Close. Yeah.
Yeah.
The funny thing was, is those guys, the guy administering the polygraph test, they recognized him from the sheriff's office. They're like, oh, that's, what's his name, whatever. And basically, we were rooting for that guy. Right. So when Ryback came and stuff started breaking down, that guy kind of took off and, like, ran back towards, you know, the back. And we were, like, cheering him on because he basically ran right in front of us. and, the, you know, the good thing about sitting with those guys is during the polygraph test, like, they were trying to start these really purposely hard to chants.
Right.
More like...
They're like, speaking this legalese.
This would be admissible in court, or no, this wouldn't be admissible in court, or something along those lines. Right. Yeah. Because, you know, that's polygraph.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Ryback was huge at that point. I think the height of his popularity really was around Hell in a Cell, 2013. Then, around WrestleMania, he kind of got lost in the shuffle a bit. He had a match against Mark Henry. Just to see who was stronger. And Mark Henry literally won at WrestleMania 29. because Ryback tried to lift him, and then Mark Henry fell on him.
Was that the whole thing with the bench press competition?
Yes, yes. Okay. I was covering that SmackDown with Blair, actually, and it was painful. It was painful. And so, you know, he kind of suffered from that. And then, like, right after WrestleMania, they put him right back in the championship scene against John Cena. Problem is, he was in the championship scene against John Cena.
Yeah.
And so, of course, he lost. Like, everything. And then they brought him back as another Paul Heyman guy to put up against Punk. And again, you're putting him up against Punk. He's not really going to win that much. Now it's Punk as a face.
Yeah.
So Punk is definitely going to beat him then. And so then that whole thing with, like I'm saying, like, you know, he had all these issues. Either guys were getting hurt or butting heads with people and not executing certain things the correct way or being reckless. And basically got put in the doghouse for a while, and he would lose matches. He was in a tag team match with Curtis Axel, but they were like the tag team jobbers for a while. And, you know, and now they're kind of coming into their own, and actually, like, I kind of like them as a tag team.
I might give them a grudging respect. I will always hate their name.
No. That's why I never say it. I never say it.
Yeah.
I always refer to them as Curtis Axel and Ryback.
However, Team Gold Star.
Team Gold Star is
totally behind that.
Yeah. And to be honest, they haven't given them a nickname. We gave them the Gold Star name.
I don't know why they haven't made them Team Gold Star.
Just like, it's so okay, good. Just whenever they were, you know, whenever it was regular Cody Rhodes.
Yeah.
They called him the Brotherhood or the Rhodes Brothers. I totally liked Codust better. Right? Right? You know you like Codust.
That sounds like something, if you take it, it'll eat away your flesh.
Probably.
Yep.
Or, you know, you might lose your mind and start, you know, going on rants about the
Cosmic Key.
Cosmic Key, yes.
No matter what it does, I feel like a healthy portion of it is bathroom cleaner.
It's super cosmic.
Yeah.
So there is a way for them to kind of reprimand guys for being overly reckless. Now, if you're like way high up on the ladder, odds are you might get a slap on the wrist and that'll be it.
Right.
You know. But, you know, they can be harsh at times too, because I think it was WrestleMania 27, Triple H got fined just for attempting to do a chair shot to the head of Undertaker.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was a pretty hefty fine, from what I imagine. And, you know, that's Triple H. That's, you know, the guy who wasn't running things as much back then, but still, you know, he was getting kind of groomed back then.
Right.
There was a cage match between CM Punk and Jerry Lawler, whenever CM Punk turned heel. And it was a really good match, actually. But Punk literally bladed, you know, and they're not allowed to do that anymore, obviously.
Yeah.
And so they find him, they find the ref, and CM Punk ended up paying the ref's fine for him.
It's good to know that even as a heel, he's a pretty swell guy.
Let's completely talk about how great CM Punk is as a dude. Not a wrestler, but just as a dude. How do you feel about Walking Dead? You're not a fan of it. Okay.
It's not that I don't like it. It's that I don't. There are a couple of zombie fictions that I thought would have made for more interesting shows.
Yeah.
Because I watched the first season. I was really excited because back when Walking Dead first came out, I was still working at a haunted house. And it was, you know, at that point in my life, it was like horror everything.
Right.
And I watched the first season of Walking Dead, and I thought the first season was okay. Mm. And I got about halfway through season two, and I know the whole point of the show is that the Walking Dead are the people and not the zombies, but if I'm watching a show with zombies, I want zombies. I don't want, you know, 5 minutes of some shambling corpse, and then, you know, 55 minutes of, I named my iPod Titanic Coral, it's sinking coral.
I knew you were going to find a way to work that in.
Yeah.
But a simple yes or no would have worked fine.
Well, see, here's the thing. Whenever people ask me if I like Walking Dead, and I'm like, no, they assume I hate it. And that gets me so much flack.
Well, okay, I just assume you hate everything.
It's not that I hate it, it's that I don't care.
Okay, fair enough. Well, anyway, CM Punk is a huge Walking Dead fan. Right. Comics, the show, everything. And he'd been trying to get on Talking Dead for a while. He finally got on, and he was on an episode with Yvette Nicole Brown from Community.
Okay.
She plays Shirley.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, that's an interesting mix. Funny thing is, they completely became the most adorable best friends afterwards. Like, they worked incredibly well on the show together. She brought notes.
Right.
And, you know, CM Punk, he was, you know, kind of playing devil's advocate on a few topics that they were talking about. And so, they started interacting on Twitter, and me being a giant fanboy of both of their stuff, I was going crazy. And they talked on the show, you know, about the comics, and she talked about how, you know, I didn't really read the comics, and he was like, oh, you should, or whatever. I think a couple months later, she had mentioned something on Twitter about, you know, still not having read the comic books, and Punk was like, seriously? Okay. Hold on. And then, like, a couple weeks later, Yvette Nicole Brown posted a picture on Twitter of, like, every Walking Dead comic that CM Punk just gave her.
That's pretty awesome.
That's an awesome dude right there.
Yeah.
That is an awesome dude. And, you know, so now he's, like, they're best friends now, and now, you know, Punk is best friends with Chris Hardwick, and I'm jealous of everything he does outside of the ring.
I was a big fan. Before I started watching wrestling, Waffle, a.k.a. J-Roll, introduced me to Grammar Slam.
Yeah.
And that was my first real introduction
to Punk. Of all the things, because I knew that, you know, I knew Punk was still pretty close to Chris Hardwick. So one of the one things that I was really looking forward to with him retiring and all that stuff is like, okay, well, maybe we'll get more Grammar Slam. Maybe he'll start working on, like, he did some stuff, like, they did a Course of the Force shoot with Punk, and, you know, he was dressed in his ring gear, but, like, a couple of, like, Boba Fett stuff here and there.
Right.
And they did Grammar Slam, they did the bowling thing. It was Punk, AJ, Kofi, and Fandango against Ron Funches, Chris Hardwick, and, like, a couple of the dudes I don't really care about.
I have not seen this.
I'll have to show it to you.
I need to.
Because Ron Funches would, like, start talking trash about people, but then, like, give up halfway through.
I can't imagine Ron Funches, like, talking trash about anything. He seems like he does not have a mean bone in his body.
No, absolutely not. The one thing I'm mad about is because Punk left in January, the day after Royal Rumble. A couple months later, I believe it was the beginning of March, CM Punk was supposed to be on Chris Hardwick's Comedy Central show at midnight, and it was supposed to be him, The Miz, and Ron Funches. How amazing would that show have been? Like, just don't really need to talk about Miz, because no one cares. But CM Punk and Ron Funches alone would have been an amazing show. But they canceled because of all this garbage going around with him leaving the company and whatnot.
Honestly, and I'm probably going to get a lot of hate for this, I hate The Miz as a wrestler, but as a character, I think he's hilarious.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I love when he comes out. I was watching something, I can't remember if it was Raw,
mm-hmm.
or if it was something I was watching on the network, but mm-hmm. he came out and he was still wearing he came out in a white suit, yeah. white pants, and he was wearing sunglasses. He got into the ring, and he took off the shirt and the pants, mm-hmm. still wearing the sunglasses.
Yeah.
And
that's important.
Was that Raw?
Yeah.
It was him and Ziggler.
Yeah.
And he kept going like, no, 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 and then he would like kind of take off his glasses and then roll out of the ring.
Right.
I thought that was really funny.
Miz is a good heel as a character.
Yeah.
Ring work,
not a fan.
Whatever. And this is another reason why I wish they had Raw from 2011. So you can go back and watch the beginning of the year, like that whole area, whole time, and leading up to WrestleMania 27. It was one of those things where, like, there was a big challenge because all the focus was on Cena and Rock being the host of WrestleMania 27.
Yeah.
And then Rock already starting to lay groundwork for him and Cena, you know. And yet, you still had the champion in the middle, and that was Miz. And, you know, it would have been so easy for him to kind of just get lost in the shuffle of all that. But every week he would come up with a new way to kind of like force himself back into the picture and be like, you know, nobody's going to forget me.
Yeah.
And it all led to WrestleMania 27, and he had a great video package.
And
like, it's one of the best I've ever seen.
Didn't leading up to this year, WrestleMania 30, didn't he keep making, like, references to the fact that he was undefeated at WrestleMania, and his was the real streak?
Yeah. And then, because he didn't win the Andre the Giant Battle Royal Memorial.
Right.
Yeah. I said that weird and backwards. But, yeah, his streak is over. I think someone else's streak ended, too. Might have been RVD. No, RVD wasn't at WrestleMania, never mind. I think RVD's still undefeated.
I'm trying to remember who it might have been.
I don't know. Fandango. Fandango was 1-0. I think right now the only WrestleMania streaks that are still alive is RVD and Michael Cole. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the 30-man Royal Rumble for WrestleMania 28.
Before 2012.
Yeah, where at various points, Jerry Lawler, Michael Cole, and Booker T
all leave the announcing table. What made me mad about that, what really made me mad about that, is the year before, in 2011, was the only year that they went to a 40-man Battle Royal. And I was thinking, they're going to be scrambling to find guys to put in this match.
Right.
That would have been the year to put every member of the commentary booth in the Royal Rumble, because A, that was the year that Jerry Lawler was going up against Michael Cole. Like, they were already building that feud at that point.
Yeah.
So that made sense for them to get involved. But they waited until they go back to a regular 30-man Battle Royal to put those three guys in. It was, no.
Yeah.
No. But it was just kind of funny the way that all played out.
I liked how, I hated watching him in the ring, but I liked when Michael Cole went to go to the ring and he took off his suit and he had like that high school wrestling leotard.
That was his,
that was his
WrestleMania 27 gear.
And he had the earmuffs.
Yeah. Here's the thing about, and give credit to Joel for dubbing their feud as Old King Cole. Yeah. It all started because of The Miz being champion, because whenever Miz had the Money in the Bank and that whole time, Michael Cole was like the only guy sticking up for Miz. Like, Michael Cole was the number one Miz fan at that time. And then Miz had this thing against Jerry Lawler, and because they made a big thing about Jerry Lawler, you know, having this big successful career but never being WWE champion ever.
Right.
You know, so he had a ladder match against Miz, and Lawler was almost about to win, and then Michael Cole got in the middle and screwed it all up. And so it was like a really long, like slow burn for that feud, and it was a fun feud to watch, and it was interesting up until they actually got in the ring, which was WrestleMania 27. After that, then it was too, like, then it would just got, it all just disintegrated, and it was horrible. But yet they kept it going for like 3-4 pay-per-views afterwards.
It seems like, because when I, you know, being a fairly new wrestling fan, when I got involved, the whole phenomenon of heel Michael Cole is because since I've been watching Raw live, it's been, you know, I guess most of y'all's hate is going towards JBL for being.
Well, JBL is the only one that is a heel right now. Basically, what happened is whenever Jerry Lawler had a heart attack in 2012, Michael Cole was still technically a heel commentator. After that, the way, like, because everyone just gave a lot of props to Michael Cole, and deservingly so for just how he handled that whole situation, because they still had, like, the rest of the show to go, and there was, like, a good hour and a half to go after the fact, and they don't slow down for nothing.
Right.
Nor would Jerry want them to. But the way Michael Cole handled it was amazing. Like, they didn't even have commentary for the rest of the night because, you know, they were just feeding more information to Cole as they went along. And plus, Cole, you know, probably was a little traumatized, so it, was, yeah. It would be kind of difficult for him to do play-by-play. So basically, they would have a match, or whatever would be going on. Then they would go back to Michael Cole, who would reset the scene and basically, you know, tell you what happened, what's going on, and whatever update they had, you know. And then, like, almost as if it was planned, which we know it wasn't, for obvious reasons, like, we know it wasn't, but, like, at the very, very end of the show, just before they cut to black, Michael Cole's like, we just got word that Jerry Lawler is, you know, he's awake, he's conscious, he's responding, and then, you know, we'll give you more updates as we go, and then, end of show.
Right.
You know? And after that, it was just impossible for Michael Cole to be a full heel commentator. And so, while Jerry was out, they brought back JBL for a couple shows here and there. And I guess they remembered, oh, that's right, JBL was a great commentator. Let's bring him back full time. And, you know, he serves a purpose, and he could be our one heel commentator. And it works very well, because, you know, you're going to have Jerry Lawler, who's always going to be the overly face commentator. And then you got JBL, who is a great heel, even when he, you know, in the ring, in the commentary, everything. And then you got Michael Cole, who can pretty much, by and large, be neutral.
Yeah.
Which is fine, because he's the one that's, you know, peddling everything. And, you know, you need a guy who, you know, is just there.
He's the Switzerland of the announcing table.
Now, you know, don't get me wrong, if Michael Cole gets up and he starts, you know, saying stuff on a live microphone in front of the crowd, they're probably going to boo him. Because that's what you do to Michael Cole.
Right.
You know? So, but now he's just more the, you know, the only time he'll get on a live mic and in the ring is to, like, conduct some sort of interview or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so he's pretty neutral. But yeah, I honestly, I love JBL on commentary. It's fantastic.
I like watching people try and steal JBL's hat.
Or, like, try to respectfully move it out the way. Any sort of interaction with the hat is just highly entertaining, because you never know how they're going to react to it.
That is absolutely my favorite thing about JBL, is how his hat interacts with the wrestler.
Yeah. There was a Jericho match last year. It was probably during the Fandango thing, where it fell over and Jericho, like, reached down to get it and just flopped it on JBL's head as he walked by.
I like Jericho.
I that's almost as good as CM Punk and his diet soda when he was on commentary.
Yes.
And then, like, the next week, like, Cena was, like, clearing stuff off the table, and CM Punk was still like, John, my diet soda. And John, like, picked it up and he, like, forcefully handed it to CM Punk, and Punk, you know, giving the death stare, just, like, grabbed it and just threw it in, like, one smooth motion. It was brilliant. Yeah, that was... I'm so glad that you dug CM Punk.
Yeah.
Because, and you know, for a lot of the same reasons I did, like, a lot of, like, the little mannerisms here and there, like, just being the quintessential smartass.
To, like, 24/7. My favorite gif that I've ever seen involving any wrestling that doesn't involve the plot is... It's still one. I don't even know what it's from.
I can probably tell you.
It's that one where Punk's holding a microphone. Actually, I don't even know if it's on life. He's just looking at somebody off to the side of the ring, and then he looks at the audience, and he's just like...
Oh.
Just like super, super like,
the,
who cares?
No, you're talking about the CM Punk is not impressed image.
Yeah.
Like, basically, that was used in any meme you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
Just
the face he's making is so good.
It was right around the beginning of the whole pipe bomb situation after Money in the Bank, that whole thing. Okay. Those promos, that's where that's from. I don't remember exactly what it's from, but or from what interview or promo or whatever.
And I really like that a couple weeks ago they had a shot of AJ and she did pretty much the same thing.
Oh, are you talking about whenever, I think it was her reaction to the CM Punk
chant? Yeah, and people were chanting, just doing the CM Punk chant, and she just, like, kind of looked over, and she's like...
And she just, you know, kind of shrugged, like, yeah, all right, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Now, my favorite one will always be Punk making Snow Angels.
See, I'm waiting one day for AJ to just come out, and when she's coming out, just do the whole...
The wrist thing. The wrist exercise.
Is that what that is? Is that limbering up?
Funny thing, like, Vince hated that. Why? Apparently Vince hated CM Punk doing that.
Why?
I don't know.
Is it because he's a weird old man? Is it because he is just full of hate?
Yes.
Okay.
No one, there's no one in the Kiss My Ass Club anymore. That's why, he's lonely.
He's just chock full of vinegar.
He's...
What is the Kiss My Ass Club?
Oh, God. Oh, God, you don't know the whole...
Are you going to have to go? Am I going to have to hang out here after we get done recording?
Oh, God. I'll have to explain it to you off podcast.
Let's edit that part out, then.
No. It's fine. No, because everyone who listens to this, chances are, they know exactly what that is.
Okay.
It was a big Attitude Era thing, and I'll explain it later, because we are running close to out of time. But first... It's time for the mail sack. Mail sack, mail sack. Why is there hair in this mail sack? Mail sack, mail sack. Let's all go inside. Mail sack, mail sack. Why is there hair in this mail sack? Mail sack, mail sack. It's your mail sack. All right, we go to this comes from @KevinTrude. Is Sandow receiving the ultimate reverse push as he loses his way down the card all the way to Zack Ryder?
Zing.
I don't know. The only thing I can compare this to was the few years ago, back when they still had Charlie Haas on the roster. Charlie Haas would come out and basically imitate whichever wrestler he would be facing. Like, dress as him and everything. And would basically lose pretty horribly. I don't know. Like, and, you know, that obviously didn't work out well for Charlie Haas, because I think that was the last thing he did before he got canned. I don't know what they're trying to do here with Sandow.
Because
it's one thing, like, he's getting solid camera time every single Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, it's not like he's coming out and just losing. Like, he's coming out, they're giving him a microphone.
Yeah.
And he's talking, and then he's losing.
Yeah. And every now and then he'll have, you know, an actual, like, decent match. He not so much had one this week because he was dressed up as an astronaut, and you can only do so much
in that can't. Suit.
Yeah. So, I don't know. He's not winning matches, and he probably won't for a while. I don't know where this is leading to. I hope... I try to be optimistic and be like, okay, they're leading to something with this, but honestly, it's just them. What would be funny for Sandow to dress up as this week? All right, let's put him in a this costume and have him lose to this guy or whatever, you know? And now it's just, we know that very childish, like, bodily function humor that Vince has. This seems like something right up Vince's alley that he would just be belly laughing at the entire time.
And I like Sandow.
Yeah.
One of the first things I ever saw when I think you guys were first starting to get me, trying to get me into wrestling, was, I think it was Waffle showed me one of those, like, outside the ring things, and it was Sandow at some comic convention. He's still, like, wearing the full suit, and he's just making fun of everyone, and I thought it was amazing. And then I actually started watching wrestling, and he's coming out dressed like LeBron James.
Yeah. No, back then, whenever he was doing, you know, the big time intellectual savior thing, when he would do signings, people would take pictures and put them on Twitter or whatever. He would be dressed in a very, very nice suit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whenever he was signing stuff, he would have a giant feather quill.
Of course he would.
It was perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really miss that. I miss that Sandow. You know, and then they did debut a new thing on the app. I think it was during the pre-show. I saw it later. Where, you know how at the end of 60 Minutes you had that dude who talks about whatever he wants for like 60 seconds at the
Mickey
end of...
Rooney?
Something like that.
Yeah, the old guy who's like this tall?
Yes.
Yeah.
Basically... They did the exact same thing with Sandow. Like, they call it Sandow 60. And he got to talk about whatever he wanted. And apparently, like, he's going to do that more often.
I would very much like to see that.
Yeah. I mean, might as well, you know? Like, what else are they going to do? Like, they got a half hour to to fill before the show.
I mean, I would much rather see the show end with, like, that or the highlight reel than, you know, Stephanie McMahon and Brie Bella just kind of whining at each other about a match at SummerSlam.
Right.
You know?
Like, yeah.
And that was how they ended Raw.
Right.
Like, that was a pretty weak ending, in my opinion.
Right. And as far as SummerSlam, they did confirm a few matches so far. Of course, you got Cena and Brock, got Stephanie and Brie, and I believe they've went ahead and confirmed Chris Jericho and Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
And maybe... I believe that they've confirmed Randy Orton and Roman Reigns. Maybe Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. I'm not sure if they've confirmed that yet or not. But obviously that's where it's going to lead to. And obviously it's also going to have a NXT or a Divas Championship match.
Yeah.
So that's where we are right now. I'm liking how SummerSlam's shaping up so far. Right now it looks like the card that Battleground was supposed to have, except maybe better finishes and better matches and Brock Lesnar. And, you know, honestly, a Brock Lesnar match always feels like a big deal. You know, granted, we were never excited about Brock versus Triple H matches, but whatever.
Yeah.
Still, it was considered a big deal, and rightfully so. SummerSlam is becoming, like, the Brock Lesnar showcase. Which I'm okay with, you know, because usually it's a... Especially after last year's match against CM Punk. That was a great match.
I need to watch that.
You do. Alrighty. I guess that's it for me this week. Let me see if I can figure out how to do this by myself again. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at CRTire, where we live tweet every Monday Night Raw. So you'll get plenty of jokes, hijinks, me repeating things that Beardsley says, or retweeting stuff that he actually puts on Twitter whenever he feels like it. Every Monday Night Raw we'll tweet, and you know, appropriate Sundays whenever there's a pay-per-view. And if you have any questions, comments, anything you want us to bring up on the show, send those to our email. That's classyringattire@gmail.com. And we are on iTunes, so subscribe to us there. You'll get every single podcast automatically to your iTunes, to your phone if you have the podcast app, which you probably should have. I think it comes with it, but you should have the podcast app. It makes everything a lot easier. So you can get it on the go, and while you're there, you know, go ahead and review us and give us a rating of 5 stars, hopefully, if you feel like we deserve 5 stars. Because I feel like we... Okay, shut up, Beards. Like, we are worth 5 stars, I think. You know, and I'm not, you know, bragging. We put a lot of effort into this. But, you know, whatever. But yeah, write us a review. We'd love to get some feedback from you guys, and it would help us out tremendously. And if you are listening to us on wrestling.insidepulse.com, leave us a comment on there. We'd love to hear from you. Beardsley's waving hi at you. That's a reason for you to comment right there. But until next time, stay classy, and huzzah.
Huzzah.